33. The longer this summer of 1933 lasted, the more unreal everything became. Things gradually lost their substance, changed into bizarre dreams. I began to live in a state like that of a mild fever, pleasantly limp, slightly dazed, and free of all responsibilities. I registered for the assessor examination, the great final examination of a German lawyer's training, which confers the right to become a judge or a higher civil servant. I did it without any intention of ever making use of that right. Whether I passed or failed the exam was a matter of complete indifference to me. Normally, you will agree, examinations are stimulating things that put you on your mettle. People even speak of examination fever. I felt nothing of the kind. The fever I experienced was of a very different nature. I worked on the preparatory homework tests, which are part of the assessor examination, in the Legal Archives, a library on the top floor of a large office building. It had airy studio rooms with glass partitions, beneath a blue, windy summer sky. There I wrote my answers as lightly and carelessly as one writes a letter. I simply could not take them seriously. The questions and points for discussion assumed a world that no longer existed. They still covered the Civil Code and even the Weimar State Constitution. I read obsolete commentaries on these dead and buried clauses, which only yesterday had been much quoted. Instead of picking out the sentences that were important for my answers, I read on and began to daydream. From downstairs I could hear tinny march music. If you leaned out of the window, you could see columns of brown uniforms rolling through the streets, punctuated by swastika flags. Wherever the flags were, passers-by on both sides of the street would raise their arms in salute. We had learned that those who did not were beaten up. What was the occasion this time? Oh, they were marching to the Lustgarten, a parade ground in the centre of Berlin. Herr Ley had left the International Labour Office in Geneva because he had disagreed with something, and now the SA was parading to the Lustgarten to slay the dragon once and for all, with singing and shouting. You saw these marches, and heard this singing every day, and you had to be careful to disappear into a house entrance in time to avoid having to salute the flags. We lived in a state of war, though it was a rather peculiar war, in which victories were achieved by marching and singing. The SA, SS, Hitler Youth, Workers' Front, or whatever, would march through the streets, singing, "Do you see the sunrise in the east?" or "Heathlands of Brandenburg," form ranks somewhere, listen to a speech and thunder, "Heil!" from a thousand throats, and another enemy would bite the dust. It was paradise for a certain kind of German, and there was a definite 1914 feeling about it. I saw old ladies with shopping bags pause and watch such a brown column of marching, lustily singing men. With a gleam in their eyes, they said, "You can see, yes, you can just see that things are looking up." Sometimes more substantial victories were won. One morning a strong force of police surrounded and occupied the artists' quarter in Wilmersdorf, which had been home to many left-wing literati and still was to a few. Victory. There was great booty. Dozens of enemy flags fell into the hands of our troops. Subversive literature, from Karl Marx to Heinrich Mann, was loaded onto the trucks by the kilogram, and the number of prisoners was respectable. That really was the style in which this event was portrayed in the press, as though it were a second Battle of Tannenberg. Another time all traffic on road and rail was brought to a standstill at a stroke at midday, and every vehicle was searched. Victory! What things were uncovered, from jewels and currency to propaganda material of enemies of the state. It was really worthy of a spontaneous demonstration in the Lustgarten. At the end of June, all the papers had banner headlines. "Enemy planes over Berlin." No one believed it, not even the Nazis, but no one was particularly surprised either. That was the current style. A spontaneous demonstration followed. "Germany needs the freedom of the air." Marches and flags. The Horst Wessel song. "Heil!" About the same time, the Minister of Culture deposed the church authorities and appointed the Nazi military padre Müller as Bishop of the Reich. Ludwig Müller, a former naval chaplain, chosen as prospective Reich bishop by Hitler in May 1933. He failed to gain the position in the church elections of May 26, 1933, but his election was forced through on September 27, 1933. At a demonstration in the Sportpalast, this was celebrated as a victory for German Christianity, with Adolf Hitler as the German Messiah, flags, the Horst Wessel song, and Heil. This time the celebrations concluded with a rendering of Luther's chorale, Ein fester Burg ist unser Gott, A Mighty Fortress is Our God, perhaps in honour of the institution that was being buried, or for some other tasteful reason. Then there were church elections. The Nazis ordered all their nominally Christian followers to the ballot, and next day the press reported an overwhelming election victory for German Christianity. That evening, as I rode through the city, there was a swastika flag on every church tower. The Nazis were to encounter serious resistance to this attack, but that could not yet be discerned at all outside church circles. It had not been without qualms that I had participated for the first time in an issue of the governance of the church, and placed my ballot paper in the box labelled with the solemn words, Bekennende Kirche, Confessing Church. Footnote, a Protestant movement upholding the traditions of Scripture and the confessions of the Reformation against the Arianizing changes proposed by the German Christians under Müller. I did not feel very committed. I had always respected rather than venerated the Church, but I felt strongly that it should be respected even by those who did not venerate it. The blasphemous fancy-dress cavortings of the German Christians disgusted me, but I was utterly convinced of the futility of any kind of resistance, particularly in the Church. For decency's sake, I thought, one should commit oneself to a defeated and violated institution. I felt a certain sympathy for the conservative old gentleman whom I heard at this time saying, "For pity's sake, now we even have to fight for the faith that we don't have." Emotions became less intense in the course of the summer. The tension dropped. Even the feeling of disgust weakened. It was all covered by a narcotic cloud. For many who had to remain in Germany, it was a time of acclimatization with all its dangers. For my part, I half felt as if I had already left. A few more months and I would be in Paris. I never considered the possibility of return. This was just a waiting period. It did not count any more.